Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Radu Palamariu, Managing Director of Advocate Global. Our mission is to connect you with the supply chain ecosystem in Asia and globally by bringing forward the most interesting leaders in the industry. And I'm very happy to have with us today Vivek Sundar, who is the Chief Operating Officer of Swiggy. He went from just two neighborhoods in Bangalore in India in 2014 to become the country's largest on-demand food delivery platform. Present in 500 cities and with a fleet of delivery partners that has reached a staggering 200,000 individuals, they have over 130,000 restaurants on their platforms. And in the last 6 months alone, they've added 60,000 new restaurants in the platform, which is an amazing number. They've raised $1 billion in fresh capital, making it the biggest ever funding round in the country's food tech sector. And they are furthermore the fifth most valuable startup in India at a valuation of $3.3 billion. Vivek has a lot of experience. He's worked for 20 years in FMCG, in the FMCG industry. He's had different roles and responsibilities with Procter & Gamble. And in his last position, he was the managing director there for East Africa operations of Procter & Gamble. So a pleasure to have you with us today, Vivek, and thanks for making the time.
Thank you, Radu. Thank you for having me here.
And let's start first by telling us a little bit, how did you end up joining Swiggy? I mean, it's not exactly a usual step for a lot of people because you had an extremely successful career in the corporate world in Procter & Gamble, and now obviously you joined as the CEO of a very successful challenger now. It's not even a startup anymore, but how did that happen?
Yeah, sure. I want to tell you that, you know, I had planned for it for 20 years and all of that, but that would be a lie. So let me just tell you what really happened. The reality is that I had a background in like with many other people from the Indian business school scenario, I had a background in computer engineering and management. And I'd always been interested in the intersection of business and technology. In fact, I had a lot of joy and satisfaction, and frankly, very rewarding in working on tech-enabled business outcomes within P&G. And the fact that the company was innovating in many ways, both on supply chain technology as well as on consumer technology, was a great place for me to learn the stuff at sort of the cutting edge of technology. Obviously I had done a lot of roles with P&G inside and outside the country, and I was happy doing it. It's a great learning environment. It's a great culture as well. And I'd actually never heard about Swiggy since I left the country in 2015 for an overseas assignment. And this is before Swiggy had even entered Mumbai or had become famous. So I actually never knew about Swiggy when I left the country. So, you know, this was the Christmas New Year period, and I was getting ready to come home for my New Year break. And a recruiter friend of mine asked me if I'd be coming to India. And I said, yeah, I am. And he said, would you be interested in meeting the founders of Swiggy for a role? I actually, at that point of time, had to research and find out more about what they do. And so, I mean, I Googled, I asked a few people who lived in India, what was experience, you know, and I couldn't order because I was sitting outside, but I did have a few friends order and tell me what the experiences were. And I said, hey, this is interesting. I've seen the vision. I've seen what it's trying to do. And I understand as a consumer marketer in India, the demographic trends that were taking place in India. And I'll talk a little bit about that in the future, about how that actually comes together to make us successful. But suffice to say, 3 months after that first phone call and dozens of meetings, phone calls with the founder CEO, which is Harsha, and his leadership team, it convinced me that they're on to something good. So I decided to join this incredible team of young, talented professionals out who are essentially changing the way India eats. There are very few times when a company or an industry will be changing the way a whole population does something as basic as eating. I guess back in the 60s, Whirlpool would have felt that it's changing the way women deal with housework when it was inventing washing machines and all these home appliances, in that it was freeing up women from the drudgery of homework. And obviously that meant that they had more time on their hands and they could also join the workforce. So I felt that given that this is an incredible sort of inflection point for how technology is helping change the way people do basic stuff, there's a great learning atmosphere. There's obviously a great ambition. A lot of experiences that I have are valuable to this startup as it scales. So I joined. And obviously there are big differences between P&G and Swiggy. But honestly, if I wanted to find a bit of P&G in Swiggy, I should have stayed at P&G. So the choice of swapping order for chaos and stability for dramatic growth was quite frankly a conscious one, but it was not something which was sort of planned for a long time.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. And I'll just tap on the opportunity to say that you should always keep executive search and recruiters as good friends, because you never know when you need them. But by the way, we are one, so I'm just also shamelessly.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is that this recruiter friend has called me 10 times in the last 20 years.
And he always said no. But still, you know, I mean, the point is, and that's why the best recruiters are the ones that are doing it for the long run. And the point is that he did finally place you, and hopefully in a very, very good role with in a company that is on a mission. So, you know, persistence pays off, you can argue. And I wanted also to share that just as we were, you know, I was preparing and I was also doing more research on Swiggy. One of my friends in my LinkedIn feed posted something to the extent, every time I go to Bangalore, he was saying, I am spoiled for choice and I order my food through Swiggy, which means that I usually put on 2 kg when by the time I come back to Singapore. So it usually takes 2 weeks of business trips. And he was saying, the experience is flawless. The food is amazing. The choices are infinite. So Swiggy is just a spoiler for choice, basically. That was his feedback that he put on LinkedIn, right? So he was an extremely happy customer. And that kind of feeds into my question to you. What do you see has been the secret sauce that has caused Swiggy to skyrocket, to become such a successful and successful in such a short period of time business?
Sure. I mean, first of all, I'm very happy to always hear feedback from the customer, especially a positive feedback. The only advice I would give you, since he's your friend and therefore by definition my friend's friend, is that when he's here, many of the hotels have great gyms, so he can Swiggy through the day, but in the morning he can go to the gym too, so that he doesn't.
I don't think it's fair to blame Swiggy for him putting on weight. Yeah. I think himself but, to blame.
Although yeah. I mean, it is something. But restaurant foods in India are not necessarily the healthiest. But this is a very important question, and the question you've asked about what causes the business to skyrocket is a sort of, you know, almost case study question. And the reality is delivery has always existed both in India as well as elsewhere. I mean, I've lived in the UK, I've lived in Singapore. You could always have a delivery from certain restaurants. You could make a phone call, you could do a WhatsApp, and you could have delivery of food. It's not that we invented delivery of food. I mean, the real inventors of delivery at scale is actually our great partners, Domino's. And the reality is many restaurants would have an option to deliver within a radius using surplus kitchen or serving staff. The problem was the choice of restaurants was limited. Not every restaurant had a delivery. The service was extremely unreliable because it relied on surplus kitchen or serving staff, and other friction points like payment options all also coexisted along with that poor restaurant choice. So Swiggy, as a consumer first company, tried to solve all of these issues using the strong operations and technology competence, and it needed strength both in operations as well as technology. So this is the sort of, let's call it our view of what we did to make it happen. But before I get deeper into what we do, I do want to say that there is also a benefit of timing and luck, right? With most things in business, there is a massive demographic trend, which I'm confident is happening in many other parts of the world. I've lived in Africa, lived in parts of Southeast Asia. And this demographic trend essentially is more working singles and working couples. There's greater female participation in the workforce. And therefore, you don't have the traditional role of the woman as the caregiver and the sort of kitchen manager. There is a lot of economic migration that is happening. Many of the cities are filled with people who never grew up in those cities that they're working in which case that means that they don't have a family infrastructure to deal with things like food, etc. And the cities in India, and I'm guessing you visited cities in India, but I visited cities in Africa and Southeast Asia. I mean, the traffic jams of Jakarta and Bangkok are comparable, if not worse, than ones in Delhi, Bombay, Bangalore. And today, if you go to a Lagos or a Nairobi or even a Cairo, these are all big, these are all, let's call it, emerging problems around the world. And traffic and pollution means that literally nobody wants to come back from a hard day's work and hit the street again to go out and eat. So those are all external demographic trends that essentially help the case for delivering food at home. And as long as, therefore, you solve the problems that the consumers have, you have the so-called perfect storm or the magic sort of, you know, the trifecta of things that need to be in place for us to do. And so essentially, as a technology-first company, we are a three-way marketplace. We connect over 100,000 restaurants to over 200,000 delivery executives to over 10 million customers every single night who are essentially trying to look for options to dine from. And through strong algorithms that connect the three, essentially work in a way that a gig economy workforce of delivery executives is connected to the restaurant to pick up food and then connected by the same app to deliver food to the consumer. And all through the experience for the consumer is seamless because all the way from the order placement to the actual delivery executive's sort of journey from wherever he is to the restaurant and to their home, it's all appified and it's all gamified. So consumers has complete control and complete sort of visibility to what's happening to his food delivery. And therefore, it just means that you've, since you've taken away the anxiety and the sort of uncertainty, the business just skyrocketed.
I will want to probe one level further because you mentioned rightfully demographics, external demographics, and the different aspects that were there. However, I'd like to probe a little bit deeper into why Swiggy and not somebody else, because it is the same with Facebook. And I mean, there were 10 other, 20 other, 30 other social platforms, but eventually, you know, Facebook kind of emerged. You know, there must have been certain things that also, and maybe it's customer experience, maybe it's, you know, it's the ease of doing of your platform. Is there something that you can also point out in terms of what specifically Swiggy has done to be better than XYZ, let's not call your competitors on the market?
Sure. I actually think that a lot of our competitors, first of all, we were not the first food delivery player in India. I think we were number four, but it was a crowded field. We were number four, but there were 50 food delivery players all over the country because obviously all of them were seeing these demographic trends, right? So they're all seeing this need for this business to exist. I think the single biggest differentiator that we had that the others didn't have is that we said we can't just send the order to the restaurant and be a lead generation platform and kind of just hope that the delivery happens. We have to insource and own every single aspect of the delivery experience because the anxiety on, especially on hot prepared food, is on the fact that the food will basically arrive on time and it will going to arrive in a sort of an acceptable state. And therefore we had to make sure that the delivery fleet are somebody that basically work for us as a separate three-way marketplace, because a lot of the guys in the past were basically using a two-sided marketplace of connecting the restaurant basically getting orders from the consumer to the restaurant. We were the ones who really went hard after putting significant amounts of technology and operational strength into the delivery experience. So for the first 3 years, if you did a consumer survey and an NPS, as I'm sure your listeners are familiar with the Net Promoter Score, the single biggest differentiator that would basically make Swiggy stand out head and shoulders above the rest was the fact that our algorithms and our apps together were letting the customers have a stressless delivery experience. And that became the initial differentiator, the stuff that gave us, let's call it, 2 years of runway. Eventually, everybody followed suit because they knew the writing on the wall. But by that time, we had 2 years of runway and we had got significant momentum. Since then, of course, as a consumer-first company, we have a lot more innovations that we have invested in. And I can talk a little bit about those innovations in a subsequent question or perhaps now if you want. But those innovations are riding on top of, let's call it, the first advantage that we had of speedy, reliable, amazing delivery that the consumer doesn't have to think about. So it is all order it and forget it. But if you're interested, you can follow the driver all through his journey. And that just made a tremendous difference in the first 3 years. And those are the 3 years where most of those 50 other competitors just died out because they didn't have that advantage.
No, fantastic. I mean, it's so if we were to nail down the secret sauce is customer experience. And it's not really a secret sauce, really. It's a basic fundamental that we forget, a lot of businesses forget, and that's when the challenges occur. And we also deal with a lot of businesses in the express or in the, you know, parcel delivery, and it's exactly the same. People, e-commerce specifically clients, they want there to know where the parcel is. They want to be able to trace it, to track it. And whoever gives them that visibility is better than the others. And of course, in terms of food, it's even more so important, because if you're hungry, you definitely want to know where it is, how fast it's going to reach you, and you're much more
efficient. Absolutely. In fact, let me just give you an interesting anecdote on that one. It's astounding how quickly consumers think of what was good yesterday becomes the norm today. And it changes at the pace of light. So let me give you an example of that. In a small city, which is a city where Swiggy doesn't exist, when we first enter, because the demand density is not that great and the sort of, you know, we're still new and we're still sort of, you know, settling our workforce, orders often take up to 40 minutes of delivery. And consumers absolutely love that. So our NPS scores would be like north of 50 in those cities. 6 months later, because demand density has gone up and our operations have improved and stuff like that, the delivery comes down to the average of about 32, which is what we have across the country, including in the new cities. But at 32, consumers are not as happy with it as they were 6 months ago when we were delivering at 40. So not only do we have to keep increasing the pace of sort of, you know, higher quality of service, consumers are basically raising the bar constantly on us on what is considered acceptable performance. So I think this challenge of doing it at scale is what really keeps us awake every night. And I say night specifically because we have over 40% of our orders after 7 p.m. So this is actually a night and day business rather than a day and night business. And this is the key. I mean, customer service, but customer service is an ever increasing, raising bar of what good standards ought to be.
And I'd love to, let's talk about that. You mentioned new things, you mentioned new technologies, you mentioned new, you know, you mentioned innovations that you tried to implement. I was reading just this week, I think, well, at least just this week I read at least that you're in talks about drone delivery, and you and a few other companies have been selected by the regulators in terms of testing some potential opportunities there to see if it's feasible or not. So maybe tell us a little bit about what you're experimenting with.
Sure. I mean, so drone, like with most other things, is part of an early experiment sort of set. We are constantly looking to innovate. There is actually a separate, even though we think that this company is quite innovative, there is a separate team within that is sort of less burdened with the day-to-day operations. And they are the ones who are innovating on a whole bunch of things. So we have AI and machine learning innovations on as we speak. We obviously have drone thought processes and sort of drone pilots in situ. And there's a whole bunch of them. I mean, these are so early stages that I wouldn't want to kind of, you know, let your readers believe that a drone delivery in India is a few months away. I suspect it's a little more than a few months away. But the bigger question we are trying to solve is, how do we make sure that more consumers come onto a platform, and the ones that come at different cities with different use cases at different time slots of the day are getting the seamless experience. Because the trouble with a lot of Indian cities is that you could be in a situation where you could have traveled 50 kilometers in about half an hour, and then you hit the city, and in the next half an hour, you may actually only travel half a kilometer. And given how crazy it is, the only real solution is, I mean, while the governments are trying to figure out metros and all the other means of communication, of transportation, we think that the drones will come to a place, it'll come to a place where you physically can only deliver within the time that food stays fresh using a drone. Because the reality also, and by the way, this is particularly true in India, where the restaurant density is very, very low. I don't know if your readers are aware of it, but restaurant density per capita or restaurant density in the cities that we are talking about is amongst the lowest in the world. Now, you don't often feel that when you're visiting India because everything is so crowded, but the vast majority of the stores in India are grocery stores because people tend to buy groceries a lot and consume food at home a lot. given the nature of caregivers and sort of, you know, cooks that we can actually hire. And given that, the number of restaurants, by the way, the number of restaurants on our platform is less than that across 500 cities is less than that are found in Beijing alone or in New York City or London City alone. That's just how low the restaurant density is per capita. If you have less restaurants, then you need to innovate in two fronts. One, you need to innovate and provide more restaurants into newer areas. And that's an innovation that we have called Access, which I'll talk about. And the second one is to say, hey, listen, but if there's a great restaurant and people want food, then the only way you can really traverse the crazy landscape of India is by drone. So the logic for the drone is to make great food travel to places where road traffic simply won't work. And innovations like Swiggy Access is to provide new geographic locations to great restaurants that want to partner with us and move to restaurants. So there is this innovation called Cloud Kitchen. I wouldn't say we invented it, but we are definitely the ones that have given it the biggest impetus, which is these are kitchens which really only exist on the cloud. They are essentially just kitchens. They don't have any seating space like a traditional restaurant. They are run by iconic restaurants in new geographies where they don't yet want to open a restaurant, sit-down restaurant. And because they are on Swiggy, they're able to serve that catchment area. And as far as those people are concerned, they're still getting that amazing restaurant in their locality without having to travel what would have been 10 kilometers to travel to the actual restaurant of that city. So there are over 5,000 cloud kitchens that we have. And this business is just exploding because there is real estate is tough and restaurants don't often want to open new sort of, you know, seating areas. And because a lot of the business is moving online, cloud kitchens is another innovation that we've opened. So I would say cloud kitchens and drones are attacking the same problem, which is not enough food choices for urban consumers in India.
Fascinating. We actually had a question about cloud kitchens and thanks for addressing it already. And how do you, and another question that was there, and again, maybe you can or you cannot share, I don't know, but the one of the listeners was actually wondering whether you're at some point going to go and build blocks around the e-commerce itself and delivery itself, because, you know, why only do food deliveries? You could do full-fledged deliveries as well.
Sure. I mean, the reality today is that our strengths are logistics and operations, technology, and customer centricity. Those are the ones which we call as our three core strengths as a company. Now, as a result, if we find that the consumers are essentially looking for friction points in their lives that are either stated or unstated friction points, we will try to go after addressing it. Now, e-commerce in itself is not something which right now we have either thought of entering or not entering. But let me give you an entry that we have already made that is essentially taking these three strengths and solving the problem. Essentially, grocery stores have this, there's like millions of grocery stores around the country, largely mom and pop stores. They're all sort of, you know, offline stores largely. And the reality is consumers often have to go down from their homes or go out of their homes and go through the same traffic that they are unwilling to go through for the restaurant food delivery part to buy stuff. Now, consumers don't mind doing that for a large bulk purchase because that's sort of once a week or twice a month. But for the regular day-to-day top-ups that they have to do, whether it's the milk or the bread or the eggs or the cheese or the cigarettes or the smaller top-up items, they often don't want to go and face the same traffic. And again, the same unreliability problem happens if you have to call the delivery, call the restaurant or call this grocery store and have a delivery, because if he doesn't have free labor, he's not going to send the people. So we've just launched Swiggy Stores, which connects hyperlocal grocery stores to the consumers. And we're finding that even though it's relatively new days yet, it's still in its first year of operation, it's delivering the same sort of consumer love that our restaurant business did in its first year. Why? Because we are solving the same problem. We are essentially aggregating the catalogs from a whole host of grocery stores so that consumers are able to see what they want to order. We are having the same sort of familiar interface and the familiar payment ecosystem that they're used to with Swiggy. And we have the same reliable delivery fleet that is actually delivering with the same sort of, you know, 30-minute sort of period. And the reality today is that almost no e-commerce player that runs a very different business model of procurement, warehouses, and sort of, you know, last mile distribution. Their business models are very different from us. We are essentially collecting demand is hyper local and connecting it to consumers and basically fulfilling it through our last mile sort of, you know, delivery fleet. And so to say that almost 100% of our grocery store pickup and deliveries have happened in the last 35 minutes after delivery is pretty unique, right? I mean, because no e-commerce player is going to be able to meaningfully run a system that delivers everything that you order within 35 minutes after ordering.
No, it's incredible. And we're talking about India. We're talking about a high density, high traffic. I mean, for whoever is listening to this and hasn't been in India, you know, go on YouTube and you'll see what's happening in traffic. I've had the chance to visit India a few times.
I'll give you an example. Even a city like Bangalore, which was already quite bad in terms of traffic, which is the average urban traffic speed was 17 kilometers per hour less than a decade ago. And today it's half of that. It's just incredibly.
Oh, wow.
I mean, 7 or 8 kilometers per hour is worse than central London.
Well, I mean, if you're a fast walker, I guess you.
if you're a fast walker and don't mind jogging. You're right. If you're a fast walker, but don't mind dying in the smog, then that's
in the smog, yeah. There's a different level of complexity to that. That again is worth mentioning. I have a question, and let's address also the elephant in the room, and especially in the context of the last, and let me not mention their names, but there was a big company in the real estate business that was supposed to IPO, and I think everybody knows what I'm talking about, and it didn't happen. There were some huge cash burn rates that they incurred, also in the delivery, food delivery businesses. I was reading somebody 30, 40 million per month type of a burn rate. There were some numbers thrown at some of the businesses, you know, Swiggy or some of your competitors in India. But I wanted to ask you, the cash burns are high. Obviously, you need to expand, you need to grow. But how do you kind of think about it in the context of also growing ultimately a sustainable, profitable business? How, you know, where is the cash burn? Where does the profitability come in? How do you put all of this into context?
Sure. So the first thing to kind of keep in mind is that at this moment, we're still in blitz scaling phase. And because of the fact that we have, let's call it respected competitors. I mean, Uber Eats isn't a meaningful competitor. Obviously, Zomato is a meaningful competitor. Given that these are meaningful competitors and we hear of other people wanting to enter into this sort of attractive space. I mean, it's now in the public domain that Amazon wants to enter as well in India. The reality is that given how much competitive activity is there, it is important and imperative for us to maintain love with our customers and make sure that on the things that we want to win with, we win. And on the things that we don't want to lose on, we don't lose on. Now, discounts is something which is one of those. So a part of the cash burn is discounts. Right. I mean, the reality today is that 2 years ago, there was less discounts in the market than it is today. Why is that? Just because of the fact that the number of competitors just doubled in the last 2 years. And so therefore, we needed to kind of increase our discounts to stay within what is called the acceptable threshold of our consumers in terms of the acceptable value. But we were always investing in our growth story, which is the number of cities we've grown into, the number of delivery executives we have, the number of restaurants we have, because we knew that getting new customers to come onto the platform, getting them to transact and love the platform is the moat that we need to have that will essentially stay there when this sort of discounting frenzy dies down naturally. So I think our investors know this, and that's why we have the support from them as we've had so far, which is that the business is inherently a sustainable business in that the average order, if you just do the unit economics, a lot of the businesses need to worry about unit economics because the fixed cost will start playing out the moment you get scale. The unit economics of this food delivery business is inherently attractive provided certain conditions are true. And those certain conditions are that you must have an order value that is reasonable. I mean, for India, the order values are somewhere between $7 and $10 depending on the order. And that's basically in what is called we think it's in the happy territory. We have a commission and an advertising and a delivery revenue that is basically giving us a certain sum of money. And as long as that sum of money is greater than the amount that we need to pay the delivery executives and the payment gateways and all the other costs that we incur, the business is inherently viable. So part of what drove the frenzy into this market in India was when we actually demonstrated our ability to deliver unit economic positivity in some of our early cities. The moment we were able to demonstrate that we can run this business in a unit economic positive manner is when the investment journey took off on a rocket ship. And of course, that meant that we grew fast, and that meant that we also attracted a lot of other competitors and so on and so forth. So what you're seeing right now is a cash burn that is fueled after having seen what is called viability of the business. And right now, everybody is just in a get scale and get sort of customers to be acquired and so on and so forth. And even today, let me put it this way. We are acquiring more customers today than we were same time last year. Normally, a business that is basically growing this fast should start getting more and more of its business from existing customers. And while our existing customer base is increasing, we're still getting more new customers to come onto the platform than we were same time last year, which means we are in growth phase. And at this growth phase, we do think that the burn should continue. That said, we keep coming up with smart ways in which we can drop the burn, whether it's through efficiency means or through sort of, you know, effectiveness ideas of, you know, discounting effectiveness and delivery effectiveness and stuff like that. A few of our orders are what we call batched orders, which means we basically have one delivery person delivering two orders, provided it meets certain criteria. And as long as it meets the criteria, we send two orders with one delivery executive, obviously it's an efficiency that helps the bottom line too. So the burn is high, that I'm not shying away from, but there's a certain reason for it. And it's on the back of having demonstrated what is called inherent attractiveness of the business.
Mm. And I want to ask you for the future. So let's say, where is this heading? Two, five, whatever years ahead of us, right? So you're continuing to grow, you're continuing to scale, you're continuing to, what's the kind of next milestone that you're aiming at? Because, you know, from 500 cities, you will reach 1,000 and all of that, you can do batch orders. But is there some level of, you know, sharing that you can do with us? Because, you know, the more you extend at some point, you know, obviously the bigger density, the bigger networks will also mean that you're going to be more effective in a lot of different ways. So maybe tell us a little bit about the plans for the future and how will that look like?
Sure. So I already referenced a little bit of it, but now let me deep dive it. So essentially today our business is largely food delivery. And the reason for that is basically our old sort of vision was changing the way India eats. And while that journey is still got a long, long, long runway ahead, because if you think about it, the average, there are, let's call it 300 million urban Indians, and each of them are having 90 to 100 meals a month. The number of food deliveries that the whole industry does, us plus our competitors, is a fraction of that. So just on food delivery alone, there is a long runway ahead. And we think that we have to come up with innovative ways in which we can get more of those consumers to transact more frequently. But given the strength that we have, which is technology, consumer centricity, and operations or logistics, we feel that there are more problems that our consumers are facing today in urban India that we need to solve. So we've sort of pivoted our vision from changing the way India eats to becoming the kings of convenience for urban India. Now, what that opens up is that it opens up things like Swiggy stores, which is what I was referencing before, which is connecting customers to nearby grocery stores, nearby pet stores, nearby kiosks, nearby florists, nearby any stores, frankly. And that's a product that just launched. It's in its first year. We've seen early good results, but we think that in the next 5 years, that will be a big part of Swiggy. The second thing which we have done is we have the ability to connect A to B. And there's a lot of friction. There's a lot of trips that are made across the city that are, let's call it, local, hyper-local courier jobs, which is, you know, either from a consumer to consumer point of view that, oh, you know, I forgot my lunchbox at home. Can I have my lunchbox sent home, sent to the office? Or I forgot the keys and can I have the keys sent to somebody else? Or, you know, I want to send this mobile phone charger to somebody. There's a lot of these sort of, you know, use cases that are there of hyper-local intra-city courier that Swiggy Go can do. But remember that the moment you have the ability to pick up anything from place A and send to place B, it opens up a lot of opportunities for other players also to basically apply a hyperlocal, very reliable system of delivery of things to consumers from place A to place B. So Swiggy Go, which is a small packages piece, has also just been launched. And again, it's got early consumer love. But remember that both of these, Stores and Go, are still with this, with what we call the on-demand platform. We also acquired a company which is called Super Daily, which is, by the way, the morning milk run. So think of on-demand as on-demand and think of the milk run as something like a railroad. Or think of on-demand like mobile phones, which is, you know, anytime you want, you connect. And it's sort of, you know, not tethered to any location. And think of a railroad as the equivalent of the landline at home. The reality is that once you have a machine that basically has a route to a consumer's home on a subscription, things like milk in the morning or bread in the morning or things which need to be fresh in the morning and need a daily run, the moment you establish that railroad, then you can put a lot of things on that railroad and make it really, really attractive for both the consumer as well as for us economically to be able to service, because you already have the fixed cost of somebody going to their house. Adding more things to that is essentially going to come at relatively low incremental cost. And it's great value for the consumers. It's great value for us. And so that is also something, the railroad on top of the sort of on-demand system is something we expect to scale over the next couple of years. Now, these are what is called the problems that we have sort of trying to solve for. And these are things that are in market. They are tests and early pilots in the market. In addition to that, there is a whole host of new innovations that we are thinking of that are sort of still in the pre-oven stage, and they're not sort of in beta yet. So I wouldn't want to talk a little bit about, I wouldn't want to talk about them yet, just as yet. But again, think about it as it will reflect our logistical sort of prowess, our technological bend, and our consumer centricity. So we're constantly polling consumers and finding out what are the friction points that they have.
Hmm. And would you say that mostly you want to focus in India, or do you also have plans at some point, and have you, I'm sure you've considered going regionally?
This is one of the things which we get asked a lot, which is business model India specific, or is it scalable across other parts of the world? Now, I'll give you my point of view, and I know that my point of view is largely shared by the founders and the other leadership team members. We believe that while our business operating system has certain tweaks or certain quirks that are India specific, and I can talk about that in a bit, the business model is by and large not specific to India, which means it has the ability to work in a Cairo, as in a Nairobi, as in a Lagos, as in a Brasilia, or even a Jakarta. So there's nothing in our business model that makes us sort of, you know, India only. Obviously, there are meaningful competitors in those cities. So obviously, we are mindful of that. But we do think that once we are sort of, you know, at the appropriate stage, and if we have the right level of sort of expertise and partnership, we don't see why Swiggy should only be India specific, especially when we start solving many, many, many new use cases for India. Then that bundle of things, which is the kings of urban convenience, is something that can spread much better, because essentially nobody today, we believe, provides that sort of omnibus, everything under the roof, all urban conveniences under one roof sort of a system that we do. So our ambition is including things outside of India, but there are no imminent plans to leave, if that's the question.
Yeah. No, I mean, the closest that I have seen, just in terms of sharing, and they've done a fantastic job in one market for now, is, and I'm sure you know them, is Gojek. So they're kind of a super app in many ways, but also themselves, they have not yet duplicated that in any other market. And look, I mean, just to be clear, where personally I stand, I don't even believe necessarily that you need to do that, right? I mean, it's India is such a huge market. Dominating India and in itself is a multi tens of billions of dollars opportunity, right? So, I mean, I think a lot of times people, I ask the question because we got it from our listeners, but a lot of the times we get lost a little bit into how fast can you scale and how fast can you go global? But, you know, is that really the point? I mean, the point is, can you serve your customers really well? And can you be very, very close to them? So if it's one market, great. If it's several markets, you know, great as well, but you know, start where you are and be very good at where you are.
Yeah, I think this is one of the things which This is well put. By the way, I think that there's a lot of logic in what you're, merit in what you're saying. India is huge. We haven't even solved 5% of urban India's problems. So if you think about the fact that there is a, you know, first there are 20 times more problems to be solved. And then those 20 times more problems are to be solved 20 times more frequently. So if you take the penetration frequency and the use cases piece, we think our business can basically be 100 times bigger before we start hitting some sort of natural laws of gravity in terms of not having enough room to grow.
Yes. Shifting a little bit the conversation towards the leadership, talent, finding people side as well, because that's a key element when you're growing at the pace that you're growing. And when you're developing at the pace that you're developing, you also need kind of to ensure that people are being developed, that, you know, maybe somebody that led 10 people all of a sudden in 1 year leads 100 people. This kind of things can happen in hyperscaling mode. How do you ensure at Swiggy that you have a good leadership pipeline, that you're preparing your people to turn leaders faster than in a normal PNG type of an environment?
So let me put it this way. I would like to believe that the majority of the time I spend is on the business, but happily and sadly, in a sense, I mean, I say happily, I spend most of my time in essentially both assessing talent, but also basically getting talent to come into Swiggy. And that's not just true for me, it's true for all the leadership team members. We spend an inordinate amount of time in the recruiting process, actually in the pre-recruiting process, because often enough, there's a lot of great executives out there who kind of have certain fears about moving into the startup world. And so it's important that we basically talk about what are the good things and what are the not so good things, so that there is less information asymmetry out there amongst good quality leaders, both in other startups as well as in non-startup sort of environments. And therefore, we have to constantly be building a bridge with great talent, even if we don't really see a fit for them in the immediate future. The business is growing so fast that we know that in 3 months, we will suddenly find that, oh, that amazing executive we met and had a chat with and had a coffee chat with is now perfect fit for this one role that we have, because we're blitz scaling and we suddenly find that we need more talent. So I think the first thing is it's a 365/7 affair in Swiggy, and the senior most people are involved in it. Obviously, this ensures that we do get slightly better results in terms of talent acquisition than many of our peers, but also that they in turn help attract other talent. And so it's a so-called flywheel that we have to see when other people see that their erstwhile colleagues and their contacts have joined Swiggy and are successful, and they've spent a year and they seem to be doing well, and so on and so forth. It just provides that sort of flywheel effect. But the most important job actually begins once you've recruited them, which is providing meaningful roles and a good working environment are absolutely key to making them stay in the industry. We have an attrition rate of senior management that is a fraction of that of our sort of industry cohorts, startup cohorts. And I think the reason for that is that the founders have a very good culture of sort of, you know, letting go and letting people get on with what they're good at. Also, there's a lot of new avenues. There's always something new to learn. The company is pivoting and sort of getting into so many new things that it also means that we have lots of new opportunities. So even when somebody has become a veteran at the food delivery business, he can go on and learn something completely different, which is how to aggregate demand from the sort of grocery stores in the country, or how to aggregate milk demand early in the morning, and so on and so forth. So the reality is that the business at the heart of it has the commonality of technology, operations, consumer, but in terms of the types of problems it's solving, it's very different. So I think that mix allows us to basically stay ahead of the game.
Also, you have made that transition from corporate to this fast-paced, chaotic in many ways, hyperscaling mode of Swiggy. And a lot of people, even, you know, I mean, we get to talk to a lot of executives from corporations, and I mean, a lot of them dream or think that the grass is greener on the other side, that, you know, they may want to start their own thing, or they may want to join a startup as well. I'd love you to also share with us what were some of the biggest how to say, shocks, because I'm pretty sure that you had some shocks, right? There's definitely some culture shocks when you join a startup, but also some of the, you know, some of the learnings and experiences for you from joining from P&G to Swiggy personally, on a personal level.
Sure. So, I mean, first of all, the chaos and the sort of fast-pacedness, et cetera, are not shocks, because for me to call that a shock, or for anybody from a P&G to call that a shock, would be the equivalent, like, I mean, if you and I were to go into a nightclub in the night, you know, we shouldn't be shocked if it has loud music and a lot of smoke. I mean, we should just say, yeah, that's what we went for. We went for loud music and great. So that's not a shock. The chaos and the space and everything else is not a shock. It's just sort of, let's call it a feature of the environment I'm getting into. One of the things that actually was a shock to me is, and this is, I guess, the sort of the upside of growing really quickly, and the upside of being successful, and the upside of basically being so attractive to everybody, is just how many people are there. And this is a problem that I suspect is a little more true in startups in developing markets than there are in developed markets. But we do tend to have a lot more people solving problems than perhaps you're used to. In a typical P&G environment, the organizations are very lean. Even though the company is big, the reality is the company is very lean when it comes to the operations. So one of the things that was surprising to me is just the number of people we have. We have over 5,000 people in Swiggy, in the food delivery place. And these are not, I'm not including the delivery fleet, who are sort of contract workers. And so to have to move from an organization, so I was running all of sort of East Africa with, you know, less than 100 people. So to move from a situation where you largely run a very lean team to come to a setup where there are lots of amazing, sharp, young, ambitious people, but just the sheer number of it was a surprise. The rest of the chaos and the pace and the excitement and the all of that was sort of, let's call it, the positives, was a known or expected stuff. And how we dealt with it was very simple. At the end of the day, I mean, it's people are resources, right? So if we find that we have a lot of resources and they're good resources, then you use them to do amazing stuff, because we're still in growth phase. So that those are some of the resources that we actually used to grow from 13 cities to 500. I mean, just to put things in perspective, in the first 4 years of the company, we hit a sum total of 30 cities. We basically added 30 cities on the last day of the fifth year of the company. So if you think about it, you took 4 years to hit 30 cities. And after that, you basically created a blitzscaling plan, which allowed you to add more cities in one day than you had added in the first 4 years of the company. I mean, that is the copybook definition of blitzscaling, but it can only happen if you have good, smart people on roll. And so essentially that was the one which was a sort of a surprise, but obviously it's not a problem in itself, if you understand what I'm saying.
No, excellent example. I love the analogy that you use with the nightclub. Makes it even more clear. Would like to also ask you, in terms of thinking and sharing with people that are listening, from a, you know, career perspective, but also in general, you know, you've had a successful trajectory in Procter & Gamble. Now you're the COO of Swiggy, and it's a different ball game. Are there certain principles, maybe one or two, that you follow and you have followed in your, let's call it, career, right, so far, that have been extremely beneficial and would help also somebody listening, maybe younger, in their professional development?
Sure. Let me just think through this, because I actually don't think of the career as a sort of a sprint that you have to, or a single exam that you have to win in. The best way to look at it is it's a bit like life, or it's a bit like a marathon, where, I mean, there is a plan, but at the end of the day, you do what you do. And so I'm going to try to give you, actually, it is almost the best piece of advice I've received in the early part of my career. And I'm just going to give it to you as sort of 3 points. One, work, even if you're an employee, as if it was your own business. I have absolutely seen no benefits in thinking of you as an agent that is working on behalf of somebody. It just doesn't work. If it is your own business, if you work like if it is your own business, then you will find that you have greater levels of learning than the other person. You have greater levels of passion than the other person. You therefore grow faster than the other person. Second, don't worry about what the assignment is. Learn every single day at work. I in my first 10 years, I used to write a learning diary every single working day, which is, what did I learn today? And there were some days when I really was, and remember, when you're in early jobs, sales and marketing jobs, sometimes you could just have a repeat of, if you're doing a monthly review, then one monthly review conceptually looks like another monthly review. But if you're not thinking about forcing yourself to say, what did you learn from it? And these are learnings that you could have had from good things you did, bad things you did, good things other people did, or bad things other people did, or just you met somebody smart who taught you something, or you met a consumer who taught you something, or you met an employee who taught you something. Every single day, I used to write down my learning journey. And I did it for the first 10 years. After that, I moved it to from a notebook to a digital system, and I moved it to weekly. But it's still an incredibly rich source of establishing what is it that I should have learned and what is it that I have learned. Now, obviously, I may have learned 1% of what I wrote down because obviously of retentivity and everything. But I do think that I want to approach every day as, what will I learn? Like, if you think about this podcast, I'm going to probably play back what I spoke to you and learn on what I did well, but equally learn on what I did badly. And therefore, even if the rest of the day goes boring, this is a learning opportunity for me. So every single day at work should be learning. The third thing is, don't worry about immediate results like promotions or bonuses. If you actually don't worry about immediate results or promotions or bonuses, you will find 10 years later that you're absolutely ahead of the pack. But even if you're not ahead of the pack, you would be ahead of where you would have otherwise been if you were worrying about success. I mean, the way to think about it is, and many sportsmen have talked about it, right? I mean, Kobe Bryant will talk about it and say, I used to come in at 4 a.m. and throw, 50,000 baskets. I mean, at that point of time, stardom and what would be his score when he's playing for the NBA was furthest from his mind. He just needed to plonk down those 10,000 baskets and make sure he does a good job. And so a lot of the times, if you're focusing on results and bonuses and promotions and all of that, you will basically find that it is putting you down the wrong path of learning. And also then making you disappointed in a marathon when somebody goes ahead of you. So I think those are the three big pieces of advice that I was fortunate to get from my mentors early on in my career. And it's largely kept me in good stead.
Mm. No, I love that. And could not agree more. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. I think, I personally oftentimes have forgotten that. And life usually has a way of getting us to remember this. and sometimes the longer way is the shorter way, ironically and funnily enough, and usually the people that think long term are the ones that that end up being and I liked how you said it, you don't need to necessarily, and I think that's a problem that a lot of us face, that we try to compare ourselves with others, like Buddha said, right? Comparison is the root of all evil. Yes. When actually we should compare ourselves with ourselves 1 day ago, 1 year ago, 10 years ago, and then we would, we would probably be better off. But yeah, in theory, everything is easy. In practice, it's a lot harder. Nevertheless, great points, Vivek. Thanks a lot for sharing that. And really appreciate all the sharings and all the great case studies and keeping it real and making it tangible with us today. And wishing you and Svi continuous success. And hopefully in 1, 2, 3 years, we'll talk again and you'll tell us how a lot of the new initiatives that you are just now planning turned out to be a wonderful success.
Thank you very much, Radu. It was a pleasure talking to you. I do think that while I had a broad idea of what you're going to ask, I really loved the fact that a lot of the questions you asked were stuff that I hadn't actually prepared for. So I would say truthfully that I answered the sort of prepared ones equally truthfully as I did the unprepared ones. And I do want to thank you for keeping it real.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help.